Welcome in to Week 17 Action New Orleans Saints home finale. We're here in the Superdome, and I say we, me, Jeff Nowak, Ashley O, and Luke Augusta. We've set it all up, getting ready for a noon start against the Las Vegas Raiders.
How's it going, Jeff? Last name. I didn't know your last name was Augusta. That's a great last name. That's a good golf name. I'm feeling good. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. It's like, mostly sad, though, honestly, that's we're
I'm
at the end
healthy.
Here already.
How about that? I'm feeling healthy.
Yeah, let's feeling healthy. I wish the wealthy was there, too, but I'm feeling good about this. It's just sad that we got two games left, obviously the home finale today, so our last time in the Dome this season for Saints football.
Yeah, you know, this season hasn't gone the way that
I think
a lot of people would have hoped. It hasn't gone the way it started. That's definitely true. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I kind of want to go back in a time capsule and, like, review some of the tweets from after week two when the Saints were definitely going to the Super Bowl and everyone was dunking on everybody. It doesn't feel that way now, and we've kind of reached this point where a win over a three-win Raiders team wouldn't even
be
feel
an upset.
That great.
It'd be an upset.
It would technically be an upset because the Raiders come in favored, which is crazy. I never thought you would see a three-win team walk into the Superdome as the betting favorite, but here we are. And, you know, I do think that there's a reality where you look at it and you say, okay, the Saints are better off losing in the sense of, hey, a draft pick, there's no playoffs on the line, there's whatever. I just don't think you could look at yourself in the mirror if you can't go out there and at least play a good football team against them. Like, if you go out there and you just don't look competitive, then that is bleak. It's bleak. So I don't know. I genuinely don't know what to expect today because we've watched this kind of setup with Spencer Rattler starting four times, and we've watched the Saints not look like they can compete on offense four times. Right? That's been the story, is no matter how good you play on defense, if you can't put up points, you're not going to win games.
And that funny how that works, right?
That can't be the case today. Like, if that's the case today, I just don't know what to tell you because that is – I mean, you could at least make the argument that those first four starts came against good teams, quality teams, playoff-bound teams. That is not the case today. You have to at least look competitive with a three-win Raiders team, or I just don't know what you – who do you look at and say this is part of the future?
Looking at our LCMC health update, LCMC Health, 8 hospitals, 1 promise of keeping you well. Out for this matchup, Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick, also Chris Olave, we found out the other day, would not be taking part in today's game. He's out. Questionable for today's matchup, Nathan Shepard, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Rico Payton.
Rico.
Looking at also, the Saints have signed Kyle Hergel and Isaiah Stolberg to the active roster from the practice squad. They've also elevated Austin Deculus and running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the active roster for today's game. Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick have been put on injured reserve, so we know we won't see them for the rest of the year either. And hopefully all goes well. Obviously, Eric McCoy's elbow, we know, got injured last game.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything kind of blends together, right?
Trust your gut. The practice squad call-ups are very LSU themed. Austin Deculus and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you
go
know,
Tigers.
Both coming up. We'll see how much run Clyde gets today. It's tough to learn an offense in 2 weeks, but hey, what do you have to lose? You know, I think this is one theme of the last 2 weeks when you are in the same situation is, you know, see what you have in guys. And there's a few players like Clyde that I'd like to see more. I think we can talk about that more as the show goes on. But for Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick, you know, Lucas dealing with a knee injury, I think they're still trying to figure out exactly what the treatment needs to be for that. He was definitely going to be done for the year. It's just a question of surgery, no surgery, rehab, whatever it is, the extent of that injury. With Eric, I kind of got the feeling with Eric that if the season was longer, you know, maybe he would have been able to work back. If there were playoffs on the line, maybe he would have been able to work back. I don't know, for this week, maybe next week. But, you know, with the season being what it is and the injury being what it is, they just decided to shut him down, which is a smart move. You know, for some offensive linemen, you know, positions, an elbow injury might not be as significant as the center who has to snap the ball. And if you can't snap the ball, you can't play center. So, you know, that's a tough one. Like you mentioned, they did sign Kyle Hergel, so he will probably be your backup to Shane Lemieux today. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, Isaiah Stalbert's an interesting guy because he's a player that the Saints really like as a kind of a core special teamer. They exhausted his practice squad call-ups early in the year, and they've been trying to figure out a way to get him to the active roster. It just hasn't worked out from a numbers perspective. So it's cool to see a UDFA toil all season and get that call-up late in the year. So it's good for him.
going into this matchup against a Raiders squad, I think we said, that has won three games this year. Looking at the line right now, it's up to now a 2.5-point favorite for the Raiders in this matchup, which I guess when you have no Derek Carr, no Alvin Kamara, et cetera, Eric McCoy, that's what happens to you. But even though this Raiders team is a banged-up bunch as well, they're dealing with a bunch of injuries throughout this entire season, and, man, they've had a rotation at quarterback as well.
Yeah, I think the difference is quarterback, right? I think if you just think of it from the perspective of, hey, I'm putting money on the game, who do you feel more confident in? Do you feel more confident in Aiden O'Connell, or do you feel more confident in Spencer Rattler? And just from an outsider's perspective of, like, there's no hype nationally around Spencer Rattler. There might be hype locally around Spencer Rattler, but if you're national and you're watching this game and you just came off of that Packers game, you're like, why would I bet on the Saints? I'm betting on the Raiders.
They couldn't do anything, right?
Right. So, you know, it's the Saints' job to change that narrative, and I'd hope they could this week from the perspective of looking like a team that can score points. But, yeah, I mean, the Raiders, you know, it's funny because normally I would have spent a lot more time than I did this week kind of preparing for the Raiders. Not preparing in general. It was
a
short week,
I know what you mean.
But, like, you know, we lost a day, and that day that I lost was the day that I would typically spend going and thinking about what the Raiders are going to do. I treated this more like a preseason game, in the sense that this is a lot more about the Saints than it is about the Raiders, right?
For
like,
true.
Like in the preseason, I'm going to spend more time figuring out what the Saints are going to do than I will the other team, because it's a bunch of players that I don't really know about anyway. And other than Brock Bowers, Aiden O'Connell, some of these guys, like, well, I mean, what are you preparing for? Like, you got to go out there and play. So I don't know. It's a tough match. It's a tough situation to be in. Like, I'm curious to see. Darren Rizzi talked after last week's game and said, hey, I looked back the tape, and I was looking specifically for examples of,
the effort
right. wasn't there, because we got eliminated from the playoffs a day earlier. Maybe some guys were phoning it in. He said he didn't see that, you know, and I think to an extent he's right. You did get beat, and it looked like they were kind of beat mentally, but I think guys were going out there and putting in the effort. You know, they weren't just kind of making business decisions out there, but the Packers were just a better team. You know, over these last 2 weeks, I still think that's a question of, do you get the same level of motivation when things are, you know, just out the window? You call these kind of the love for the love of the game games, yeah. Right? You're playing for pride, you're playing for tape. And so we'll see. And I think it's a situation where if you do see guys start to phone it in, you bench them. Like, you sit them down, because it's not worth it. And it's like, there are guys behind you who want to play. So, you know, I don't think that's going to be an issue with this Saints team, but anytime you end up in this situation, it's something you have to be on the lookout for.
Yeah, and I think when you have, obviously, some leaders on your squad, like a Cam Jordan, like a DeMario Davis, and you see the effort they're putting out, it's hard not to follow their lead.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one thing to keep in mind for this game is, you know, this is a, you know, there's going to be change after this season. How much? I don't know. Where does it start? Where does it end? I don't know. Right. What's the plan going forward? What's the defense going to look like? What are the schemes going to look like? I don't know. But as you watch this game, keep in mind that, like, guys like Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Tyrann Mathieu, I don't think it's a lock that they come back next year. And it's the first time that I've been able to say that about a guy like Cam Jordan, or at least, like, from a very confident perspective, if he's coming back.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't know. He did say that he wants to play beyond this year, but he also said, like, I don't want to play defensive tackle beyond this year. So, you know, they're going to have a conversation about that. So we'll have to see. But either way, like, you watch this game and appreciate that this may be the last game you see Cam Jordan in the Superdome. And same for a guy like DeMario, a guy like Tyrann Mathieu. I don't think you're going to move on from those guys. You did sign them to an extension before the season, and you are very kind of constricted by the salary cap and how you've navigated it, to the sense that moving on from those guys would be expensive, and it would not give you any cap relief this season. It would be a sign that you are rebuilding completely. But either way, if you're in the Dome today, make sure to cheer extra loud for those guys, because however frustrated you are about this season, I don't put it on those guys.
Maybe right? We could poach Cam for the Inside Black and Gold podcast.
I have a feeling he's got bigger fish to fry, Steve. I'm sorry.
We can't offer him the big bucks at all.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
We're here on First Take. You can sound off on the Oak and Heart Jewelers talk and text line. It's 504-260-1870. What you got planned for this home finale? Are you coming to the Dome to see this matchup against the Raiders? And now the Saints, a 2.5-point dog at home in this matchup. Very telling indeed. We're going to take a break. We'll get back, get into our Saints sound bank, a bunch of sounds. Spencer Rattler, Darren Rizzi, even Clyde Edwards-Alaire. Also some Hondo Carpenter sound, who covers the Raiders for the Sports Illustrated. We'll get some idea of the silver and black right there. He's got some lengthy breakdowns of the offense and just Brock Bowers in general, too. So taking a break here on First Take. Want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. We'll be back right after this, so stay tuned.
Got to go out there and execute, play at a high level. It's our last home game, so we want to definitely go out on a high note.
We want to go on a high note, too. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak here on First Take. That was Spencer Rattler talking about some of his goals for the game. Yeah, this offense has not been able to execute efficiently at all, Jeff. That mauling in Green Bay was pretty brutal to withstand, and I know for you on the sideline it had to be rough, obviously, as well.
Yeah,
the merit for me.
Yeah. The problem with going out on a high note is whatever range I had going into this season, it's down. I'm more of a baritone, or I'm not a whatever. You got the idea.
Alto?
Yeah. I'm a low note. That's where we are. Right. But I mean, what's a high note for the Saints team? That's really the question. Like, what can you accomplish?
A victory in
over
the home
these
finale.
Final two games that will make you feel better. Not good. You're not going to feel good after a 6-11, 7-whatever season.
Yeah.
But you can feel better about it. And one of the ways you can feel better about it is if these final two games, assuming Spencer Rattler starts both of them, he's obviously going to start today. They're keeping the window open for Derek Carr to potentially return in Week 18. I'd be surprised if he did. I think if I'm the Saints, I'm like, well, we'll see if we can get you out there against your former team. But I don't think it makes a ton of sense to get him out there against the Bucs. Whatever. If Spencer Rattler can go out there and look like a guy with potential,
right,
I think you feel a lot better. The problem is those first four starts are tough. And obviously you have that second half against the Commanders where you can say, hey, we showed some positivity here. There were no sacks. There were no turnovers. There was a two-minute touchdown drive in a clutch situation.
We'll just send them out there saying, great, it's the two-minute drill the entire game.
Well, the problem is you can't have someone go out there and start the first quarter of every game and then bench him and then put the other guy in. You got to start the game, too. The guy who comes to mind as the ultimate backup played well is Kevin Cobb for the Eagles way back when. He played so well in a backup role that the Cardinals traded a second-round pick for him at the time.
The Eagles were like, bye.
That's significant. And for their backup, Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy who got traded as a backup, too. But Kevin Cobb went out there, and they were like, oh, you can't start. You just look good as a backup. This is a problem. And he never really had any success. So, that's a thing. You see guys who play better in a backup role than they do in a starting role. And I just need to see Spencer show that he can succeed in a starting role. He can succeed with all the first-team reps with the other team game-planning for him. Play clean. Don't turn the ball over. Don't take sacks. That's the answer.
Rattler was asked this week in the locker room, what does it mean making his sixth career NFL start? Oh, fifth career.
Yeah,
sorry.
It means a lot. You know, I didn't expect to be in this position that early, but we're here now. Obviously want to finish strong, last home game. We definitely want to have a great showing and leave a good taste in everybody's mouth.
Sixth appearance, I guess.
Fifth start. And, I looked this up. I spent some time this week and did my, the research firm of me on my laptop. And so going back to 1970, I went back and looked at all the fifth-round quarterbacks dating back to 1970. Only three started five or more games as a rookie. I'm not going to ask you to guess because you're never going to guess. In 2011, T.J. Yates with the Texans, he started 10 games in his career, five as a rookie.
Right.
He went 3-2. In 2004... I'm sorry, he went 2-3. In 2004, Craig Krenzel with the Bears, he started five games as a rookie.
Wow,
he went 3-2. Craig Krenzel,
The
most successful fifth-round pick probably in terms of, the guy you'd want Spencer to probably emulate in terms of a guy who did not play well as a rookie but had a really successful career. Steve Grogan with the Patriots. Career, 135 starts. He went 75-65. As a rookie, he started seven games. He went 1-6. So if you're looking at that and you're like, okay, how can Spencer Rattler be Steve Grogan? He could start seven games. If he starts next week against the Bucs, probably not going to win that game. It's going to be a tough game. But if you want to go 1-6, I feel like winning one game is valuable in this instance. You got to show how to win.
Absolutely,
Can win games. Because I look at all these quarterbacks, all these fifth-round quarterbacks that had success over their careers. The ones who started as a rookie, they at least won a game. That's the biggest difference. And so, there's fifth-round rookies. There have been 65, 37 have started games. 17 started games as a rookie. They went 16-31 in those games. So the trend is not you dominate as a fifth-round rookie, but in most instances, you go out there and you could find a way to win one game because kind of spinning that positivity forward. Like, you see a lot of these guys go out there and, you know, they'll start a game or two. If they don't have success, a lot of them, they never start again. Now, there are obviously other examples. Dak Prescott was a fourth-round pick. Brock Purdy was a seventh-round pick. Gardner Minshew was a sixth-round pick. What those guys have in common, one of the reasons they've had long, successful careers, or at least extended successful careers, is they won games as a rookie. Gardner Minshew went 6-6. Brock Purdy went 5-0. Dak Prescott, they went 13-3 in his rookie season. It's a lot easier to sell positivity around a late-round quarterback.
Just win, baby.
When you've won games, when you've shown that there can be positivity. So that's the key, I think.
Here's what Clint Kubiak, the Saints offensive coordinator, had to say about Spencer Rattler.
I'd like to see him win. I'd see him take the team to go win, whatever it takes, whether it's a 6-3 game like you saw on Thursday night, or it's a 50-48 banger. So I just want to go see him win.
What's the most important lesson that you want him to take from him?
Well, I would like him to learn that the ball is on fire. When the pass rush is out, we got to get out of our hands. We can't take sacks in 2 minutes. Got to make quick decisions, and you got to go above and beyond the X's and O's to get the job done for the team.
The ball is on fire.
The ball's on fire. I like that.
Get rid of it.
You know, sometimes every now and then Clint will grin when you say it's a question and be like, "The ball's on fire," and you can tell it's something that he's like said on repeat to the team all week because he's got to, you know, that's my catchphrase. The ball's on fire. But no, I think it's exactly what I want to see. That's been my problem with Spencer is when sometimes I think he sees a look that he's not ready for, or he sees pressure from somewhere he's not expecting it, and he freezes, and either he makes a throw into a spot he shouldn't, or he holds onto the ball, or he panics, and just like the fumble against the Packers, that was a panic fumble. There's no way around it. You know, like, obviously, you know, a sack there isn't optimal, but a fumble there is the worst thing you could possibly do. Like, you talk all the time, don't make a bad play worse. That's exactly what he did there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can just throw that ball away, if you can dump it at the feet of your running back, if you can, you know, just do anything to avoid that play, that's a different scenario. You're probably not getting shut out. You're probably kicking a field goal there instead of, giving the ball away near midfield. The other example is another bad turnover was the interception right after that kind of spectacular jump pass moment. And I think that's been a problem for Spencer is, I don't know if maybe he kind of like when he makes a big play, he takes a deep breath and doesn't, you know, he's not as locked in, he's not as dialed in for that next play. But it does seem like every time he has a successful moment in the Saints jersey as a starter, it's followed up by a kind of head scratching, like, what happened?
The old one step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, and so that's, you just want him to be able to string positive plays together. Because there have been moments. One thing Darren Rizzi said this week that I think is right on is, you know, if you took Spencer Rattler's top 10 plays from that game and just put them on a highlight reel, you'd be like, oh man, we got something here. But then if you turned around and you took his bottom 10 plays from that game and put them on a low light reel, you'd be like, yikes.
Ooh, right.
This is bad. And it's like, it's got to be somewhere in the middle. Like, your baseline has to be higher. Because you know the ceiling is high. You've seen it. You can see the talent. You can see the arm. You can see, you know, when he's in a rhythm, he can make big plays and he can make big throws. He can give guys chances to succeed. But when he's struggling, it's hard. It's bad.
No, we've talked about it, too, that one play where he made the jump pass was absolutely unbelievable. And then you turn around, very next play, you throw a duck.
Very next play. A lot of times we'll say, like, oh, on the next play. No, literally the next play. It was a bad interception. It was a misread interception. It was, I didn't see the defensive back sinking in coverage. And it's not the first time we've seen that happen. And now he's a rookie, right? And that's the risk you run when you throw a rookie in there is you're going to get shown looks that maybe you've never seen before. And you're not exactly sure what they're going to do. And you're going to make mistakes. But I don't know, like, some positivity closing out this season. Because I think if you go out there and you can't look competitive against the Raiders, and who knows what happens next week against the Bucks, you're going to go into the offseason, you're going to be sitting there with a top whatever pick, and there's going to be quarterbacks on the board, and you're going to have to look at them. And the question is, do you feel like, hey, we have a guy here, or do you not? Because if you don't, then you have to go at least kick the tires on, hey, does this guy have a future? Does this quarterback have a future?
Yeah.
So that's what these next few games are going to be about for Spencer.
You're talking about the limiting the turnovers, and here's what Spencer Rattler had to say about that.
I think it's just having great focus every play. avoiding a couple disaster plays. Felt like I did a good job of that in prior games, but, you know, you're in a road environment like that. You just got to dial yourself in every single play. Understand that everybody has to do their job to have success on each play, but at the end of the day, the ball's in my hands. It's up to me to protect it. So definitely disappointed with you know, that the last game, but, you know, want to be better this game to win, because if you don't, you'll lose.
Yeah, not ideal conditions for Spencer Rattler in any of these games. We know he's been limited with playmakers. The offensive line has been banged up. But in the end of the story, nobody wants to hear any of that excuses, as you would say, for it, even though they are legitimate, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right? But, like, you got to protect the ball. You're the quarterback.
Yeah.
The ball is in your hands on every play. You've got to protect the ball. He just hasn't done that well enough yet. There's two interceptions. It's the fumbles that are frustrating, because the fumbles are kind of more of a sign of, you know, and I used to feel this way about Daniel Jones. If you look back at Daniel Jones' career, one of the things he struggled with early in his career was he just didn't see the rush, and he wasn't able to protect the ball. Like, he wasn't able to identify where it was coming from early enough to avoid getting the ball knocked out, getting the ball stripped. And there was a couple plays in his rookie season in particular where you saw a guy just come clean off the edge. He didn't see him, and I know Jamal Adams was one of those. I think Chandler Jones had one. He just ripped the ball out of his hands. and I felt that way about Spencer sometimes. It's like, I don't know if he's identifying the rush well enough. And you know, that's, again, you're talking about a rookie. You don't want to start a rookie. There's a reason Sean Payton always erred toward these veteran backups that you could put in the game and feel like, oh, we don't have to start from scratch. You don't have that when you're dealing with a rookie. You got to kind of accept what you have and accept what he's capable of now and kind of look forward of, okay, what can he develop into in the future? The problem is, in today's NFL, you don't get that much time. You know, like, this is not what it was in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Like, you either succeed or you don't. And
ready to move on from you quickly, right?
Because there's a draft every year. There's young quarterbacks every year. And if you feel like the guy in the draft has more upside than the guy on your team, you're going to go draft the guy in the draft, right? You're going to go pick the guy in the draft. So, you know, you got to string something together that you can look at positively.
Talked about, obviously, the lack of weapons for Spencer Rattler. But there is someone he has been able to at least lean on in tight end Foster Moreau. And Rattler spoke about what Moreau means to him and this team.
You know, he's one of our guys right there. That's one of our rocks. Like, you know, he's a sure-handed guy, really smart, high IQ player, and has some of the best, if not the best, energy on the team. Great leader.
He's a coffee maker.
Yeah, we've talked about it before with Moreau. He definitely seems like someone, I don't know if he has interest in getting into coaching, maybe broadcasting, but definitely very vocal guy that is able to, you know, speak the game, makes you want to listen, and I think definitely is a someone that at least that Rattler can lean on in this offense, because there's not many pieces right now. Hopefully we get Marquez Valdes-Scantling in the mix today.
Yeah, I think he's still got stuff to do as a player before he worries about his broadcasting career, because I think he's had a really strong season. You know, and I think you're going to look at this season, you're going to say, okay, who exceeded expectations by the most?
And there's not many.
There's not a ton, but Foster's one of those guys. You know, his numbers aren't going to jump off the page. You're talking about 20-something catches, 200-something yards, 300 yards, 4 touchdowns. But it's the moments in which he catches these passes and the difficulty that these catches present that has been really impressive. And I don't know, I kind of feel like, hey, is it time that we try to, like, feature Foster Moreau more in the passing game?
Could hurt.
It seems like every time they throw in the ball, I think in the month of December, he's 10 of 13 in targets, right? Why is it only 13? That's my question. Why isn't it more than that? And so I don't know. If I'm looking for things over these final 2 weeks to be happy about, I kind of feel like, hey, give Foster a bigger role in the passing game, and let's see what he does with it, because he's 27 years old, right? Like, he's got good hands. If you give him chances, he makes plays. Give him more chances. Give him more opportunities. I don't see why. What do you have to lose?
No, especially with all of, you know, the wide receivers are out. And a guy like Alvin Kamara not in the mix, you need some kind of, any kind of playmaker in this offense that can provide a spark for you. Also, in this fifth start for Rattler, he was basically asked, what is your mindset for this game?
Can't waste this opportunity. Got to play great and, you know, take my game to a whole nother level in the offseason. Feel like I haven't even shown what I got fully yet. So hopefully we can do that on Sunday, but the mindset stays the same. Want to get better and better throughout this season and obviously in the offseason.
Yeah, just looking to improve. We need to see that out of Rattler. And I think, you know, you mentioned the turnovers. That's been a huge issue. And then just being able to read and recognition needs to get improving as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that is something he can get better at. You know, that's I think that's a it's a myth that, like, okay, you either are or you aren't. You know, like, you do develop over the course of time.
Right, I can't make your arm any better.
Right, I think arm strength, arm talent, that's something that you kind of just
speed.
Have to have. You know, yeah, height, you can't change,
right.
You know, stuff like that. But, you know, the term people want to use is moxie, and I don't know, I want to see that. I want to see kind of those intangible qualities that just make you feel like you're watching a starting quarterback. Because it is what it is. Like, you're 5-10, you're not making the postseason. But there are very different ways you can finish out this season. And there's a very negative way you can finish out this season. And a loss to the Raiders in this environment, in your home environment, your final home game, will feel very negative. And you're going to have to, you know, I don't know, is Darren Rizzi a serious candidate to keep the job? We'll find out. But, you know, I think in order to do that, you have to show that you can lead this team in non-optimal circumstances. And this is anything but optimal. And I think one statement he can make is, you know, we were on a 7-game losing streak when I took over the job, and we were able to right the ship. Now, did it last the entire second half of the season? No, but you never expected that to be the case when you sent him in as the interim. I think there was a realistic possibility that you were the 3-win team in this matchup.
Yeah.
And instead, you have 5 wins because you took down, you know, wins over the Falcons, over the Giants, and who was the other team they beat? I'm blanking.
Browns.
The Browns,
yeah.
Over the Browns. And you played tight games against the Rams and the Commanders. You lost big against the Packers. It's a very good team. And so I think if you can turn things around again, if you can finish out the season, you can say this is a trend. The trend is when things are going badly, I can right the ship. That's what you have to be able to say as Darren Rizzi. Now, if you can't do that, if you can't go out there and be competitive today, if you can't beat the Raiders, if you can't go to Tampa and in a stadium you've played very well in as a team and at least give them a run, then I think that kind of makes the decision for you. And you'll see. But I do know that the Saints, yeah, I don't think they are really into this process yet. I think they are going to wait for this evaluation to play out before they make a decision on who even their shortlist is for the head coach.
We've heard a little bit of rumblings of, you know, suspected candidates.
Sure, and that's always going to be the case. You're human. You're going to have these kind of ideas floating around in your brain.
Right.
But I don't think, like, officially they're going to really start this process until the end of the year. They're going to give Darren a chance to state his case, and that's a big statement today.
Looking at some of those rumors, I know mentioned was Mike Vrabel, the former Tennessee Titans head coach, and obviously the Patriots linebacker, and also a former Saints personnel in Aaron Glenn, who is the defensive coordinator with the Lions right now, and both are have some interesting qualities about them. Glenn, the familiarity here in New Orleans seems to, you know, scream like an easy choice, but there's still a ton of to think about there. You're basically, I don't want to say keeping around the Dennis Allen defense, but a lot of the same, I guess, schemes that DA would have, I would imagine that Aaron Glenn has as well.
Yeah, it probably would allow you to make that change with a minimal amount of turnover, which I don't know if that's what you want.
Maybe
is that what you
Clint
want?
Kubiak, I don't know.
I mean, that's the question, is what exactly are you looking for? And, you know, I think the term total rebuild gets thrown around, tear down,
whatever. Right.
I think it kind of loses the plot on, like, it's a lot more complicated of a process than just saying, all right, let's start over, hit the eject button, let's fire everybody and hire an entire new staff. Teams aren't really prone to do that as much as it sounds, as much as people seem to think they are. Like, there's so many decision makers throughout the building that you can't just pull everybody out and start from scratch. That said, I just hope when this process kind of plays out that if you go with Aaron Glenn, and I have no issue with Aaron Glenn as a potential candidate to be the head coach. My only issue is, are you choosing Aaron Glenn because you're familiar with him and because of the Sean Payton connection and whatever? Because I just think we're past that. Like, I don't think the ghost of Sean Payton should continue being a major part of the decision-making in the Saints building on Airline Drive. As successful as things were, as well as that went, I think you have to chart your own course at this point.
Right, he's gone.
Right. Now, so if Aaron Glenn is the best candidate and you come through your process and you're like, we're all in on Aaron Glenn, I'm perfectly fine with that. But if the reason you're landing on Aaron Glenn is Sean Payton and the connection to Sean Payton, then I just don't like that decision-making process. And I think folks need to be honest with themselves and say, is that why we're doing this? Is that why you're choosing a particular guy? Because of his familiarity with Sean Payton. And I just think we're beyond that. That's gone. The continuity thing, it's over with. Let's start a new path here.
talking about Week 17, Saints versus Raiders, a noon kickoff coming up in the Caesar Superdome. We are coming up on the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon at 10 a.m. We're going to take a break right now. Then when we get back, we'll get into more of our sound, hear from a little Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's been elevated to the active roster, maybe get some play today because the running back room is down their main man in Alvin Kamara. Like I said, we'll be back right after this. Stay tuned for more First Take after the break, right after this. Back here on First Take, Steve Geller with Jeff Nowak, and we got a call on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk in text line. You can sound off 504-260-1870. It says, hey guys, if the Saints lose today, don't hire Rizzi. Ask Jonathan Vilma if he wants the job. I don't care if he's got the experience. Thanks.
That is always funny to me. It's like, I don't want to hire this guy. I'd like to hire anyone whose name I know, because they will be better.
Yeah, he was obviously a great player on the field, but I think Vilma's happy in the broadcast booth.
Well, it's just I don't get that idea of, like, call Drew Brees. Maybe he wants a job. Like, I don't know. The guys in the building, they at least have experience
doing
the
job. I think they've asked him, too, before if he'd like to come on to the coaching staff in any capacity.
No, he's not interested in coaching.
No, he's not.
He's busy. He's got pickleball and stuff to deal with. he's got little burgers. Not big burgers, but little ones. He's worried about the little ones. And, you know, that's tough, you know. I don't know. I don't really want to sit here and talk about the coaching search all day. I get why people want to do that because, you know, they want to look past these final two games.
Right, exactly.
But the Saints aren't going to do that. They're going to look at these final two games. And, you know, I do think it's interesting. You look across the sideline, and you look at Antonio Pierce, and you say, well, this is an example of a team.
There you go, right.
Getting kind of turned around in the second half by an interim head coach. And saying, hey, we're going to give this guy the job. And, you know, it always makes sense in the moment. And then you look at it and you're 3-12 and you're like, did we make the right decision? I think they're going to give Antonio Pierce another year. But, you know, if you're trying to argue against, hey, do we want to go with the interim? You look at Antonio Pierce and you say, man, they did not sustain that whatever energy they had at all. Davante Adams basically quit on him. You know, and that's not a good look. And I don't want to compare Rizzi and Antonio Pierce, but I think from a vibes perspective, like, you kind of got that similar, like, man, people really rallied behind Antonio Pierce last year, and I don't know if you're getting that same level of commitment this year. So I don't know. I don't think that the Saints are going to base their decisions on what the Raiders did, but it is kind of an interesting case study in what it looks like to hire an interim, because it's a lot rarer than you'd think when you consider how many coaches get fired every year. And how many interim head coaches there actually are, and how few get hired, so we'll have to see. I do wonder though, like, if your goal is to hire a new head coach and keep Darren Rizzi around, as an interim, you know, as a guy who's would have then interviewed for this job twice. Do you stay where you got passed over twice? I don't know, because
I just hope he doesn't end up the special teams coordinator in Denver then.
it's a good question. And the other guy that you look at and you say, well, this is a really successful case study is Dan Campbell, who, you know, didn't get the head coach job where he was the interim, which Darren Rizzi was on that staff down in Miami, but has turned out to be a very successful head coach with the Lions and probably doesn't get that experience without the interim experience. And I don't know, do you think the Dolphins are sitting there like, man, we wish we had hired Dan Campbell? Maybe. So I don't know. We'll have to see, but I don't think the answer is going to be just hire someone whose name you know, because that's just going back to the text. Like, I think that's always silly. Like, oh, this guy, I recognize him, so he's got to be better than what we have in the building. That's not always the case.
At least nobody's bringing up Pete Carroll to me. I don't want to hear that one at all either. Please.
Yeah, the whole hire a 70-year-old head coach thing. I don't think that's the rebuild that you want.
Looking at this running back room, Jeff, going into the game, we have no Alvin Kamara. He is out still with that groin issue. Don't know if he'll return for next week against the Buccaneers. Coach Rizzi did mention the fact that he wants to. He'd like to suit up and doesn't want his season to be over. We've talked about this a ton. I don't think 50 yards to get it to 1,000 is that big of a deal and important. But if Alvin wants to achieve that, sure, why not? Knock your socks off. But I just don't think this team wants to get their prime playmaker any more dinged up than he already is. Looking at who you do have, Kendra Miller, Jamal Williams, Jordan Mims, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who has been elevated. And I'm curious, do you think we could see some run from him today in this offense?
I'd be surprised. I really would.
You think he might be inactive?
No, I think he'll be active. I'd just be surprised if he has a significant role. We'll see. I don't think you would have elevated from the practice squad just to make him inactive.
Yeah.
I just don't see what the value would be in that. But, no, I think this should be a Kendre Miller, Jordan Mims game, just like last week. Jamal Williams is going to factor in there, I imagine. But, no, I think this is a – I think just like last week, I'm looking for Kendre to make an impact. And I think one of the issues last week was you got out of your game plan really early. You got in a 21-0 hole early in the game, and you were kind of in the two-minute drill your entire second half, and Jordan Mims was more the two-minute guy. But when I asked Clint Kubiak about it this week, he basically said Jordan earned the right to be in the game in the second half. So clearly they liked what Jordan was able to do. I think Kendre did get confused a couple times. There was one screen pass where it just looked like he didn't know where to line up. And that definitely didn't sit well with coaches. And if they feel like they can't trust you out there, you're not going to get reps. And I know that's, you know, it's weird to even be saying this late in the season, but it's been an issue for Kendre is, you know, it's A, he hasn't been on the field, and B, I don't think they know what to expect from him when he goes out there. I know that was an issue when DA was here. So we'll see. I'd hope that he's able to go out there and put together a more representative performance like he was able to do in Week 18 last year against the Falcons. I expect he's going to get the lion's share of the carries today, and in part because I don't think the game plan is going to get away from you the way it did last week. If you are unable to keep the scoreboard close against the Raiders, then I don't even know why we're talking about it.
Obviously, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a guy that grew up in Baton Rouge, played for LSU, now wearing the black and gold, and talked about how happy he is now to be in a Saints uniform.
It's really hard to put in words, but it most definitely put tears in my eyes. And, you know, even my wife, you know, she's from Baton Rouge, and us being able to come home, and she graduated from Xavier right down the street. So it's a full swing of emotions, but not a better place to be.
And how big of a Saints fan was Clyde growing up in Baton Rouge?
I had multiple Reggie Bush, Pierre Thomas, and Deuce McAllister posters in my room. And my mom was crazy. We were texting when I was on the way up here, and she found my a Saints puffer that I used to wear with my name embroidered on it and everything. So she was like, you know, I don't know if this is going to be something that comes full circle, but I'm praying that you're able to come home. And sure enough, I wouldn't say 5-10 minutes later, I was getting a phone call. So it was pretty sweet.
Had Reggie, Pierre, and Deuce on his wall, so now he's in black and gold. Pretty cool moment for him, obviously. And you see Clyde may be able to make a difference next year with this team. We'll see what he's got still left in the tank. I think that it's a good feel-good story, hopefully, going forward for a guy that has gone through some tough times after being a first-round pick.
No, I mean, I agree. I agree with you. I'd like to see him get out there if he can.
We're going to take a break here on First Take, and then we'll wrap things up heading into hour number two, getting ready for a noon kickoff in the Caesars Superdome. Saints Raiders coming up very soon right here on WWL. I'll be back after the break. Wrapping up this hour of First Take, Saints taking on the Raiders today. It's 5-10 New Orleans versus 3-12 Las Vegas. The Raiders, silver and black, coming in now as 2.5-point favorites for this matchup. We'll get more into our sound bank next hour. Interim head coach Darren Rizzi and also Sports Illustrated's Hondo Carpenter breaks down more of the Raiders for us. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak heading to the news break, and we'll be back with more First Take right after this, so stay tuned, folks. You gotta believe it is Saints game day, everybody. Las Vegas Raiders in town. I think they made it. We're back here on First Take, and they had a bit of an issue getting to New Orleans yesterday. Troubles with the plane, and then I don't know if weather ended up extending their delay as well, coming from Las Vegas to New Orleans.
Yeah, it sounds like they had mechanical issues taking off.
Always so scary.
They were planning to get in yesterday sometime in the afternoon. Instead, sounds like they got in around midnight, give or take. So, you know, they're not going to be operating on a ton of sleep. Because, you know, obviously you land, you have to get to the hotel, you got to sit there. You know, typically you'll have plans for meetings and stuff once you get to the hotel. It's not like they just get to the hotel and go to sleep. So, you know, they're probably kind of scrambling to get some of that done. I don't know if they did that while they were waiting for the plane to take off. But, yeah, it's not helpful. Definitely not helpful.
Yeah, interesting situation for the Saints. Maybe the NFL gods smiling upon them, giving them some kind of a little extra edge in this matchup.
I don't think anyone's smiling on this game. Let's just be real about it.
Looking at this Las Vegas Raiders squad, we mentioned they are 3-12. We spoke with Hondo Carpenter of Sports Illustrated earlier in the week, and here's a slight breakdown of what he has of this Raiders team heading into this matchup against the Saints.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things. First of all, they're down 15 starters that are out. And think about that, gentlemen. Show me a team in the NFL that would lose 15 starters that didn't have a franchise quarterback that would, you know, be much better than 3-12, number one. Second of all, I would tell you, and I think this is a big one, is they absolutely love Antonio Pierce. They believe in him. They fight for him. They scrap for him. You know, the Raiders right now are playing 14 guys in their first or second year. That bodes extremely well for the future of this franchise. There is a lot of positives on this team, a lot of really good talent on this team, just not having a franchise quarterback. I mean, think about this one. Christian Wilkins, which you can make an argument as either 1A or 1B, best defensive tackle in the league, out for the season. Malcolm Kuntz, a rising superstar, never got to play it down this year when he was absolutely tremendous last year. Max Crosby hurt the entire year. He's out. Then you can go through and you just keep adding injury. Marcus Epps, who is the quarterback of the defense, out for the entire year. You can literally, Jacorian Bennett, out for the entire year. Nate Hobbs has been out. The other starting corner. I mean, you can just go through and you just keep naming them and naming them and naming them. And all of a sudden it begins to hit you. This is a team with a lot of talent that fights, it scraps. They're going to be better because so many of their rookies are playing next year. But the reality is they're not a good football team right now. But they're a team that's absolutely fought twice. They played the Chiefs and should have beat them, one of them. The other one, they were right in it to the end. They should not have beaten them, but it was a absolute atrocious call, which everybody in the league has seen multiple times for the Chiefs this year. This is a team that's coming down to Louisiana, and they're not looking for a vacation. They want to smack somebody in the face. They're angry. They're mad. They play that way. They play incredibly tough, very, very physical. They are not even close to the most talented team that the Saints have played, but they're going to make the Saints play them for four quarters. And if the Saints don't, they're going to lose. And that's the mentality of this team. They're not good, and I'm not pretending it, but I've seen a lot of teams that weren't good win games when they just fight, scratch, and claw. I told someone this. They are the Rocky Balboa of the NFL, except not winning at that level, because they're going to make them go the entire fight. And it's going to be every play, every down, and rookies are going to make rookie mistakes. Young players are going to make young player mistakes. But they love Antonio Pierce. He's not lost this locker room. It's not even close.
Hondo Carpenter of Sports Illustrated there giving you a breakdown of the Raiders, and definitely sounds like the Saints are in for a brawl today, a team that down a ton of talent, but still fighting hard for their former interim head coach. Like you had mentioned our previous segment, a guy that was the interim last year ends up becoming the full-time head coach, and not such great success this season, and you can throw a lot of that onto injuries, but once again, when you start mentioning that, it sounds like excuses, but nobody wants to hear it.
No, it's funny because when he started that clip, and I was like, is he talking about the Saints or the Raiders? Like, oh, they're down
so
many starters.
Tell me a team with 15 injuries, yeah, right?
Show me a team with this many injuries and 14 first or second year players that would have a lot more success. And I'm like,
I know what you're talking about, right?
The difference is the Saints had the first 2 weeks of the season, we were like, Super Bowl! And then, oh no. So they've been a 3-win team the rest of the way with all these injuries. So, no, I mean, it is going to be one of those pride games. It's going to be which team wants it more. Like, I'm genuinely serious. Like, which team wants a win today? Because if it's not the Saints, then they're not going to win.
The big stud on the Raiders, no doubt, their first-round pick from this past season, and tight end Brock Bowers. Hondo Carpenter breaks him down.
Let me tell you about this kid's character. He lives in Vegas. His girlfriend is in Tennessee, and he lives basically at the facility. He's always there. He watches film like a vet. I was talking to him in the locker room the other day about the rookie wall. And there's a lot of rookies playing for the Raiders, and they're all talking about the rookie wall. And I asked him, you know, have you hit it? And he goes, no, I haven't hit it. You know, he comes from Georgia where they're used to playing a lot more than 12 games. And the kid keeps himself in superior shape. He's never out in the town, literally never out in the town. He is at the facility or at his house, and he's all football. This is a kid, take away his football talent. This is the kid every dad wants their daughter to marry. Hardworking, blue collar, just absolutely loves the game. His teammates adore him. They don't like Brock. They love him. He's got the respect. He came in from day one acting like a vet. I'll tell you a great story when I knew he was going to be special. He was in rookie mini camp, his first mini camp, and he leans over to one of the veterans and is moving him and putting him in the right spot. And it was a veteran wide receiver. So here he is as a rook who knew the playbook so well, he's moving guys around. He's a guy that's walking off the field, and if he sees a piece of tape that somebody threw on the field, he picks it up and puts it in the trash can. I've met his parents once, tremendous people. They raised a great kid who happens to be a great football player, and he is everything that's advertised, and he's on the fast-track trajectory for a gold jacket.
Brock Bauer, some pretty good compliments there. Looking at this tight end, he's got 101 receptions this season, 1,067 yards and 4 touchdowns. Mike Ditka has the record back in 1961 when he caught 56 passes for 1,076 yards as a rookie with the Chicago Bears. Brock Bauer seemingly on obviously pace to break that today against the Saints.
Yeah, no, it's rare to see a rookie tight end really come out and have that level of success. Like that number doesn't sound that big in a 17-game season, but it stood for a long time. And, like, you look at even I know tight ends in general, like, it's tough to put up crazy numbers like that. I mean, Jawan Johnson, other than Alvin Kamara, Jawan Johnson is the leading receiver on the Saints right now with 402 receiving yards. They've played 15 games. Foster Moreau is up there with, like, 300-something. He's, like, fifth. Chris Olave is still way up on that list. So, you know, the Raiders' offense isn't exactly dynamic. So for a young guy to put up that many yards, and really, I mean, who are you worried about on this team if it's not Brock Bowers? Like, he's a rookie, but he's also drawing a lot of defensive attention. He's still able to put up those numbers. So, you know, I'm usually against first-round tight ends, seriously, because you can find tight end talent. Like, you look at Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, a lot of these guys, they're third-round picks, fourth-round picks.
Yeah.
He seems like the exception of, like, okay, I get it. You know, like, that's when you have a talent that legitimate. And I don't know. A lot of times we look at yardage and we don't think about, okay, tight ends have to block too. How has he been as a blocker? If you're good enough offensively, like think of Jimmy Graham, like you don't need to. I can't believe I just made that list of third round anyway. But if you're a Jimmy Graham and you're that offensively inclined and that talented and that effective, you can look past some blocking. But from my understanding, Brock's been a good blocker too. So he's kind of one of those unicorn tight ends that everyone wants. It's the type of tight end the Falcons probably thought they were getting when they drafted Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I can imagine the Raiders were pretty surprised when he ended up dropping to them in the NFL draft.
I think in a couple of years we'll get some inside access into that Raiders front office, and they'll be like, we were desperately trying to draft a quarterback, and then they all went off the board, and we were just like, I guess we'll take Brock. Because I can't imagine that they were sitting there saying, well, we don't have a quarterback, but we want to get this tight end. I think he just kind of fell into their lap, and he was the top guy on their board. But, you know, sometimes that's for the best.
Yeah, right.
You know, because if they had ended up with J.J. McCarthy, they would not be in a better situation. So, at least not this year. So we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, the Saints have not been particularly adept at guarding tight ends over the last several years. I haven't been very impressed with the – I don't want to say the scheme, but, like, the preparation for this defense over the last, I don't know, month or so. It just seems like they're getting beat the same way over and over and over again, particularly in the middle of the field, which used to be something that, you know, they take away the middle of the field. Now I don't feel like they do that anymore. So we'll see. Like, I think Brock's going to eat today. I think he's going to have a big game.
Looking at Bowers this season, too, not only is he on pace to break Mike Ditka's rookie record for tight ends, he's also just 5 catches away from breaking the rookie's catch record as well. That's any position. Rams wide receiver Puka Nacua set the record, 105 catches in 2023. And like I mentioned, Brock has 101 receptions this season. So 4 more will tie that today, and then 5 breaks that record where he has been truly unbelievable. And obviously a lot of Saints fans saying, why can't we have a Brock Bowers on this team?
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, you look at the Saints' investment in tight ends, and it has been frustrating. As much as I say, like, oh, you don't have to spend a first-round pick on a tight end, it would be nice if you spent, you know, a pick on a tight end occasionally. you know, the only draft pick that was any real investment in the tight end position over the last like 10 years is playing for Sean Payton in Denver right now, and it's Adam Trautman. Like, other than that, basically nothing. You're talking about a seventh round pick. Like, the guy's name is escaping me. Like, you just have not drafted the position. And you look around the NFL and you say, okay, what teams are successful? And it seems like every team that's successful has a quality tight end. And the Saints just don't. I mean, I don't want to say the Saints don't have one, but the Saints have not made the investment in the position that I'd like to see them make.
Yeah, we thought Juwan Johnson would obviously make more of a leap than he has, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have some guys at tight end. I just don't think you have any stars, and you haven't had a star at tight end since Jimmy Graham. And that was the last time I looked at this offense and was like, oh, it was really humming. Even those later years with Drew Brees, I think it was a lot more about the defense complementing the offense than the offense being dominating most of the time. And the last time you can look at the Saints offense and say it was dominating anybody was when Jimmy Graham was here.
Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during their inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Check that out online. We're going to take a break here on First Take, be back with some of your calls, and also get into more of our audio with interim head coach Darren Rizzi right here on First Take after the break, right after this on WWL. Back here on First Take, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak bring it up to the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, which is coming up 10 a.m. And that will lead into the noon kickoff right here inside the Caesar Superdome. We are currently at Gate B, Loge level in the mezzanine area, waiting for the Cajun Cannon to show up for his 10 a.m. show. Now I want to get back to our Bud Light, the Oaken Heart Jewelers talking text line. We've got our good friend Down Under, Tony in Australia. Man, how you hanging in there, Tony? What's this season been like for you? And Merry Christmas to you. What's going on, Tony?
If they play the way they played last week, they'll get slaughtered. That was just terrible. They were bullied. We can't get bullied against the Raiders, the D line, or the O line. They got to stand up and get them be counted.
Yeah, it's been that game against the Green Bay Packers was, I guess, the perfect storm of everything that could have went wrong for this team. They didn't get out to the fast start they wanted to, and just a superior, they were overmatched in every way, offense, defense, and you really did get bullied in the offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's a little bit of a, you know, bulletin board material, a little bit of like, okay, we got embarrassed last week. There's no way around it. He got embarrassed last week, and I think, you know, the typical approach for coaches when things go really bad is you try to find some positives. When things go really well, you try to find some negatives. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of negatives you could pull out of that game. But I think, you know, you're trying to find a way to get back into a rhythm in some way, form, or fashion. I don't think they're going to get bullied today. If they do get bullied today, that's a massive problem. That's a more than just, okay, we're going to figure it out problem. But I don't think it's going to happen today. I know Vegas has the Raiders as a favorite. I don't know. I think the Saints are going to go out and show some pride today. It's their last home game. You got a lot of players who understand that this, you know, this could be their last game in the Superdome. And I think they're going to come out and play like a team that cares. Now the Raiders, I'm sure, will do that too. You know, if you listen to the Hondo Carpenter, you know, interview, he said this team hasn't quit on Antonio Pierce, still a team that's playing hard. I can't say I've watched a ton of Raiders games this year because they aren't shown to me, but it, you know, you do in the limited ones that I have seen, it has been a team that's competed. It's not a team that's constantly getting blown out. It's just a team that doesn't have the talent to win a lot of games.
You're and not I'd going say back for the all 22 of the Raiders, Jeff.
You know, it's sometimes that misses me, but you know, I'd say the same thing about the Saints. In most games this season, I feel like you've seen a team that's competed. They just haven't won a lot of these close games. And you have two teams today that can say the same things about themselves. Now, there's always going to be, you know, games here and there that get away from you. Last week against the Packers was one of them. A couple games, and a majority of those games were games that the rookie quarterback started. And that's been my biggest issue is, like, I don't know. This is a game that you have to compete in. You have to be able to compete in this game.
From our super fan in Australia, that's Tony. We go to our guru in Gretna, Jimmy. Jimmy's joining us now on game day. What you got for us today, man?
Hey, what's up, man? Look, this is the last hurrah. You know, I bought the kids some fireworks, been cutting the grass again, fighting the fog, fighting the rain, and we're going to the game today. Look, tickets are like $15. All right. And I know the Raiders, they're not that good like us. They travel. People are bummed. They want changes. Obviously, look, we're probably riding with Rattler to the end of the season. And I just want to put things in perspective, guys. Troy Aikman, I think, was 1-15. You know, Jeff, you can pull this up. What Troy Aikman's record was his first year as a starter. What Peyton Manning's first year as a starter with the Colts was. It wasn't good. So we got to keep that in mind. Now, am I saying Rattler's the future? I'll say this. Between him and Haener, he's got the arm. He was used to having to be elusive at South Carolina because his offensive line there was pretty bad, like here at the Saints. One thing I noticed, I feel bad for Haener, guys, because, you know, he only got a half. He feels like he deserved more. People were upset. They yanked him. He probably got the deep six. Who knows? He might never recover from this. He just had an issue. Both of those guys are short. Rattler's just better at getting out of the pocket. And, you know, Haener just, with his height, was having a hard time seeing over that line. He took a lot of sacks. I think he was very cautious because he didn't want to get sack fumbled. So, yeah, he went into the sack position pretty quickly. So I do feel bad for Haener. But I think Rattler has a NFL-caliber arm. I just wish we could see him having proper protection and being able to, you know, go through the progressions without just 1.5 seconds of time back there. It's an open audition for a lot of guys like Isaiah Foskey, Kendra Miller. I mean, I don't know what to say about Foskey. I've brought him up on y'all's show multiple times. You know, the old saying is never draft a West Coast quarterback, never draft a Notre Dame player. I'm sorry, Notre Dame's in town. Georgia's in town for the Sugar Bowl. But I hate when we draft Notre Dame guys. They just don't pan out. But, hey, if Foskey's hearing this, it's time to step up. So I want to get your take on some of these guys that are in an open audition zone right now, you know?
Thank you, Jimmy. Jeff, you got those stats on the quarterback numbers he was talking about?
Sure, yeah. Troy Aikman was 0-11 in his rookie season. Peyton Manning was 3-13. But the difference is both those guys were number one overall picks in the draft. So you, like, again, when you are a fifth-round pick, your runway is not that long. Either you show something or you don't. When you're a number one overall pick, you're going to get grace, and because you're going to get thrown out there immediately. You know, Spencer got a month plus before he had to make his first start, right? Like, you get luxuries that a number one overall pick doesn't have because the pressure is not put on you immediately. But the negative is either you perform or you don't, because we can get there's plenty of fifth round quarterbacks we can get every year, yeah. Right? So there's a difference there. I do want to, you know, one thing we haven't talked about yet that I do want to talk about is, like, okay, there's an evaluation element that goes on right now. The funny thing is when we asked Darren Rezzi about it early in the week, I think it was on Tuesday, it was the interview he did after the game. It was like, hey, is this the time of year where you kind of have to evaluate guys? He kind of just laughed because he was like, who? I mean, like, we've been evaluating guys all year. Like, there's not that many players on this roster that aren't getting played in significant reps. The one guy, and this is me talking now, not Darren, the one guy who, like, if you're talking about this as a Christmas tree and you're like, oh, the presents we haven't unwrapped yet, there's only one box under that tree that I feel like is still wrapped. And it's Isaiah Foskey. And it's just a player that has not played. I think he's got 55 reps on the defense this year. It's actually fewer than he had as a rookie. And he only was active for like 10 games as a rookie. Now, it's weird because I could just sit here and say, oh, it's because he hasn't played well. That's why he's not getting on the field. I don't think that's even why. Like, he may not be playing well, but at the same time, you've been remarkably healthy at the defensive end position. Between Cam Jordan, Carl Granderson, Peyton Turner, Chase Young, you've missed one game, and that was Peyton Turner, I think, in week 3 or 4. So, you know, and Tano Pasadena is back now. So even that guy who had a torn Achilles, he's back. Like, you're adding guys to that room. So he's like the fifth guy on the depth chart. So I don't know. I can't even sit here and say the reason he's not playing is because he's playing poorly. I just don't know. And so I do think over the final two games, that's the one guy I look at and say, you know, his snap count is 55 this season. I want to see that double over the final 2 weeks of the season. And I don't know if that means taking someone off the field and pulling them back and saying, no, we've seen enough. I think it would be either maybe Carl, because Carl's under contract and you don't have any question about it. Cam, this week, you're not going to take him off the field because, again, it's like this could be his final home game. I don't think you'd do that to him in this game. But, you know, over against the Bucs next week, I'd like to see Isaiah Foskey effectively be your number one edge rusher, because he's a second-round pick. We're not talking about a fifth-round pick here. You're talking about a second-round pick from last year that, you know, is he good enough? Is he an NFL player? I don't know. I haven't seen him play. Now the coaches obviously have a better read on that because they get all the tape from practice and they get all these reps. And, you know, maybe they have made a decision. But either way, like, there's not a ton that you're looking at on this roster and saying, what do we have in this guy? He is the one player I look at that I'm like, okay, let's try it out and see what happens. Because you're going to go into next year, you're going to have to make some decisions on guys. And if I have a player in my second round pick, that makes some of the decisions for me. If I don't, then I don't know. If I only have a practice squad guy, then that's a completely different scenario. So I don't know. You don't have playoffs in the picture. I see no reason why you can't get Isaiah Foskey some meaningful reps.
Speaking of not having playoffs in the picture, interim head coach Darren Rizzi was asked about being eliminated from playoff contention and what it feels like.
You come into the season, you know, wanting to make the tournament, wanting to make the postseason. And so when that goal gets kind of, you know, when you're unable to reach that, it's certainly a letdown. At the same time, you guys have asked me before about the last game or practice today or anything like that. You wouldn't have any idea coming out to practice today, watching our guys work and compete, that we were any different than any other week this year. So, you know, listen, is it disappointing? Yeah, naturally it's disappointing because that's one of our goals every year. But the guys have handled that, I think, well. I know some people look at last week's score and say, oh, well, that must have been a reason they didn't, you know, they got eliminated the day before and all that. That really wasn't the reason for that score. So I still saw a really good effort from a lot of guys, and I expect the same thing this Sunday.
You mentioned that early on, Jeff, with Rizzi saying that he is still seeing this team going out there and trying. Nobody's quitting.
Yeah, and that's important. You know, one other guy that, just to continue on the point of evaluation, the other guy that I looked at, I'm like, oh, maybe they get a look at him, is Charlie Smith on the practice squad.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's a situation where you're going to go into next training camp and you're going to have a kicker competition between him and Blake Groupie, and I don't know, there's not that many opportunities to get a guy a kick in a live game, and this feels like it could be one of them, maybe not this week, but maybe next week. I was like, hey, is it possible that, you know, maybe you deactivate Blake Groupie for that game and you elevate Charlie Smith off the practice squad and just let him go out there and make some kicks? I asked Darren about it. He basically said no, mainly because, hey, Blake's been out here all year. He's been a professional. He's done a really good job. I think he's had a really solid season. He did miss those two kicks out in New York, the 50-plus yard kicks in the wind. You know, it's tough to really hold that against him. The funny thing is, last week, you look at Blake and you're like, man, Blake had a really light day. He went out there and he kicked the opening kickoff, and that's it. He, you know, it's, I give him credit. Every time the Saints are on offense, he's out there warming up and he's going through his routine.
Like, sit down.
The Packers fans are giving him a hard time. They're like, you're not going to get to kick. Sit down. But, you know, I actually think I agree with Darren in the sense that I think Blake has had a really strong season. I disagree in the sense that seeing Charlie get some action in the NFL would undermine Blake's season in any way. I think it's more just saying, hey, this guy's been working on the practice squad all year. Let's give him an opportunity.
Maybe, but it's something where they're worried about showcasing him too much to another team.
Maybe,
or not really.
But if you're gonna send him into a competition next year and he doesn't win it, then I think you're moving on anyway. So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't see it that way. But if you were wondering whether they were gonna try to get him out there, it sounds like no. It doesn't sound like they're gonna do that. But those are the only two players that I look at and say, okay, evaluation time. But again, I don't think it's a scenario where these guys aren't playing hard. I agree with Darren. I think they are playing hard. I just don't think they're not a good enough team to beat the Packers or to compete with the Packers. And I think that was clear.
Well, we're taking a break here on First Take, brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. We'll be back with even more right after this. Stay tuned as we get ready for a noon kickoff, Saints Raiders, right here on WWL Saints Radio. Be back after this. Welcome back into First Take. Venture Global donating $10 per Saints receiving yards to their Catch for the Coast program this season. Venture Global innovating to provide low-cost LNG to the world. Their current donations are at $32,720. Thank you. You, Venture Global. Going back into our sound bank here on First Take, interim head coach Darren Rizzi was asked, what's he want to accomplish in this home finale against the Las Vegas Raiders?
It's been a while since we've played a complete game, all three phases kind of in sync, everybody playing their peak performance. So, you know, for our last game at home, that'd be a great opportunity for us to do that. You know, all three, regardless of who's playing, you know, all three phases working together, playing. Playing in sync, playing complimentary football, and it is our last. Our fans deserve to you know, our fans have been great. I got to be honest with you, really, since I've taken over, the fan support has been phenomenal for me individually and our team. And it's always nice when you're playing at home to give back to the fans and give them one last, something good to watch and something good to look at, some exciting football.
Coach Rizzi is also trying to secure a head coaching job and was asked, what is the most important thing he thinks in this job interview?
Like anybody, you want to be evaluated on the complete body of work, no different than the players. Unfortunately, when there's wins and losses, no one ever asks about the circumstances. So there's wins and losses. That's what they are when you're a coach, and that's what they are when you're a team, right? As the old saying goes, your record is what your record is, and you are what your record is. And, you know, listen, I think that when people look at, since I've taken over, I would hope that everybody would just take into account the full body of work. I think there's a lot of things we're doing really, really well, and there's certainly things we got to improve on, like every football team. But, you know, it certainly goes into more than just the wins and losses. And so I think that we put our best foot forward here every day, and I think that that's been proven so far. But you know, I'm just really worried about this Sunday.
Yeah, Rizzi has the tough task of trying to, I guess, convince the higher-ups that what you're seeing out there, effort-wise, and at least the passion the team is presenting on the field, is not resulting in the victories that he would hope for, but there is that want, that effort, and that try that you're seeing from this team down the stretch. They're not quitting on him and kind of just mailing things in the rest of the way, since we're, you know, the season's basically over. You don't have postseason ahead, but you still want to put good tape out there for your film. And, you know, it's a job interview not just for him, but for the other players too.
Yeah, the way I'd put it is that with for Darren in terms of his prospects of maybe taking that job full time, I don't think there's anything that he can do over the final 2 weeks or that the team can do over the final 2 weeks that would guarantee him the job, right? Like that would win him the job per se. Like it would come down to an interview and candidates and the situation and whatever. I think there are things that can happen over the final 2 weeks that can lose him the job. And one of those things would be going out here today and not having a pulse
laying
against the Raiders, right?
Exactly.
Like there is a final two-game result here that can make it so it's not even worth having the conversation about. So, you know, I think that's – Darren's not going to sit there and talk about his job prospects, and as he shouldn't. Like, he's just trying to – I think whenever you go to an interim coach, the primary goal is to, you know, let's not let the building burn down over the final however long. And that's a long time to go with an interim. Week 10 through week 18 – like, so much can happen over that stretch of games. And so I think it's already been a success in that sense. Like, yeah, obviously, you don't want to go out in Monday Night Football and get blown out by the Packers. It's not a good result. But when you go to an interim coach, like, the goal is not win out, right? The goal is make it to the end of the season in a respectable way. I think he's done that. So, you know, I agree. I don't think the problems with this team are lack of effort, lack of preparation. I think it is talent-driven. It's the same way the Raiders. A lot of their struggles are talent-driven. You know, you go into the season saying, hey, our starting lineup can compete. Our starting lineup is good enough that we can go toe-to-toe with most teams in the NFL. But we never sit here and talk about, okay, what about the second-string guys? Are they good enough to go toe-to-toe with even the second string of other NFL teams? And that's what we're going to find out today in terms of, you know, some of these lower level matchups. But what we've seen in some of the higher level matchups is no, the Saints backups cannot contend with some of these other teams around the NFL. And that's something that this front office, this team, this franchise has to figure out, because the NFL, so much of it in the regular season comes down to, can your depth players play at a high enough level for you to continue to win games? Because injuries are going to happen. It's professional football. And over the last few seasons, what we've seen is no. When the Saints get past that front line of the depth chart, they're not good enough.
Remember the Saints were struggling and fans were saying, oh, fire Dennis, fire Dennis. We're like, hey, this team's not going to pull the trigger midway through the season. Everyone relax. They'll reevaluate things after the end of the year.
Wow.
Then that home game, I think, against the Denver, Sean Payton making his return here.
Help.
That kind of started out the wheels, and you saw a team that was just really lacking in so many areas. And then the game against the Carolina Panthers was just like the death blow for Dennis Allen's tenure.
He lost the locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. Like, that's what I was saying is, like, they're not the Saints don't want to make a change midseason. No team wants to make a change midseason, but some teams are way more willing to do it. Some teams are like kind of waiting for an opportunity to do it, I think. In this case, I think it was like, hey, if you lose the locker room at any point, you can get fired. And I think that's what happened for DA, is that loss was so traumatic in terms of how it happened, and it just had to. It was the beginning of the end in that week seven. The Thursday Night Football loss to the Broncos. It's this season all kind of blends together. It was part of that seven-game losing streak. And that's what, you know, I don't think, yeah, I think Rizzi has the locker room. I think he has the locker room behind him. And at this point in the season, there's something to be said for that when things have gone this poorly. And just like Hondo was saying, with the Raiders on the other side, Antonio Pierce still has the locker room behind him. And when you've lost 12 games, that's not for nothing. I think a lot of times they will give you another opportunity.
We're taking a break here on First Take. When we come back, we'll wrap things up as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff coming up with the Cajun Cannon. So keep it locked right here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Who dat? We're back here on First Take as we close things out, getting ready for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. Up next with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. A noon kickoff in the Caesars Superdome between the Las Vegas Raiders and the New Orleans Saints, the home finale. It'll be sad not to be back in this building for another Saints game, but we do at least have the Sugar Bowl and the Super Bowl coming up, Jeff.
That is true. We'll be busy in this building. It just
right.
Be busy
we'll
with
be
the Saints. Yeah, and hopefully next time we're in this building, another 2-0 start coming in. but it is always kind of a sad feeling. Even in the bad seasons, it's like, you know, a couple months from now, I'd be like, man, I wish I had a football game to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't care what the quality of it is. It would be nice. It would be nice to go out with a win in this building, so at least we can ride that in the offseason.
What do you make with the folks? There's a lot of fans, obviously. What's the point in winning now, because it just damages draft stock? And I do understand that point of it, but like you mentioned, just that feeling of being in that winning mode again makes a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, I get it. I get why, you know, as a fan, you look at it and you say, well yeah, okay, we want the best draft pick possible, but you're not selling that to the players and the coaches who this is their livelihood, right? Like, tape is tape. Something Riz talked about this week is you have a video resume in this league and this game is on it. There isn't a footnote in the corner that says, hey, this game didn't matter, so don't worry about it. Like, no.
In the tough times, this guy doesn't show up.
No, there's that, and then there's other teams just going to look at it and say, this isn't good enough. This is bad football. And so teams aren't going to put that out. Like, players aren't going to put that out. They're going to go out there and try to win a game. And I think as a fan, like, you know, what benefit do you have from rooting for a team to lose? Just enjoy the game, man. Like, it's just enjoy a football game. Forget about everything else. Watch it, cheer, yell. And if they win, they win. And what I always say at this point in the year and in this situation is you kind of become bulletproof as a fan, right? Because you can go out there and you can have a good time,
right?
And you can cheer. And then if they lose at the end, you're like, hey, best case scenario, we enjoyed the game and we didn't ruin our draft pick. So, I don't know. Like, if you get a win, you get the elation of winning. If you lose, you there's nothing that can happen.
Jeff, enjoy the sideline today. We'll
always
be hearing
good.
You more on the broadcast. I'm Steve Geller. That's a wrap on First Take. Coming up next, Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. Stay tuned for the Cajun Cannon right after this.